The theater. The theater.
Bring out Louis.
Theater. Theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater. Theater.
Crew,
what?
Hey. It's been a minute.
Hey there.
Who in the hell are you guys? Why are you in my room? I know.
We live here, Scott.
Yeah, I know. No, it's nice. But it's been a bit.
We're the twins that live in your closet. It's been a while. It's been a while.
Didn't we say February like 2nd originally?
Yeah.
At the end of last season, but.
But you know what? We needed some time. We needed to take some time.
We needed some time, and stuff's happening, and we're doing things, and. Yeah.
I'm nodding
for sure.
My head. Yes.
Yeah. It. But season five.
It's season five, y'all. It's
season
five. Yeah, our show's going to kindergarten.
Yay!
And we're changing it up a little bit this year. We're doing things a little differently.
Yes.
And then next year we'll probably change it up again. But this
we're ever
this podcast,
evolving.
We're ever evolving. This podcast is fungible and we love it.
Yeah, totes.
Fungible. We stand a fungible pod.
Fungible pod.
No, but we're changing up this year. We're gonna explain more of that, but we're gonna be talking a lot more film and theater and kinda like where that intersects and all that kind of stuff.
And TV.
Yeah, and TV and all the things. And it's going to be super fun. But we've got like a little bit of cleanup to do because it's been a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's a few things that need to be talked about.
Please. Mm-hmm.
So first things first, CJ, you saw a show that changed your life and perspective on shit. And I would love to hear about that because you've only really talked to us minorly about it.
Yes.
You haven't really gotten to go into it, and I think we kept saying, like, save it for the pod. So
yes.
Now is your time. Tell us about the show that you saw about a month ago.
I saw it at the beginning of February. I flew to Chicago to see I saw it at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater on the Navy Pier, which, by the way, Chicago, beautiful, well done. I really enjoyed the city.
That space is amazing.
And that space the space is a rep. It's a completely indoor replica space of a Shakespearean theater, the way it's set up. But I was lucky enough to get in the fourth row for the Sufjan Stevens musical, Illinois. It was directed and choreographed by the most recent West Side Stories, Justin Peck. Mm. And I'm a little biased because it is based on Sufjan Stevens' 2005 album, Come On, Feel the Illinois. And it is all about my home state, small towns that you would only know if you grew up there, historical figures you would only know if you grew up there. So I was very attached to it to begin with.
You're a big Sufjan fan.
Huge Sufjan stan, forever and always. But like this album in particular was a big one for me.
Yeah.
And it was 90 minutes long, no intermission.
We love it.
I am sure the nice young men sitting immediately to my left thought I was a fucking lunatic because the second I sat down in the theater, I just started crying.
Yeah.
I was just crying. And every song, start to finish, crying my eyes out. The main performers that were on stage, it was all dance. And it was beautiful, emotional, gorgeous dance. They had a full band in the back, a very Sufjan Stevens type band. They had amazing overheads that were playing on like an old beat up billboard that was high up on stage right that changed for every song they did. But they took these songs from this album and they turned it into a story. But it was just beautiful from top to bottom. And I could be wrong on this, but I think it was a thing at the Chicago Fringe last summer. Mm. Someone told me it went to New York sometime in between there, but then the Chicago Shakespeare Theater picked it up. And now it is in New York until March 26th.
Nice.
Sweet.
And it was diverse from top to bottom, from the people in the show to the performances to the art forms. Like, it was just this beautifully well-rounded show. And I can honestly say it is the best piece of theater I have ever seen.
Wow.
So
Yeah, hopefully it makes the rounds. Hopefully it gets to LA and it, you know, and it does its rounds around the country. That'd be rad.
Yeah. So, yeah, Illinois, y'all. Justin Peck, y'all. Sufjan Stevens, y'all.
Come on, feel the Illinois. Very cool. That's exciting. Well, we'll keep our eyes out for Illinois.
Yeah, yeah. There's articles popping up about it all over the place. So
we had some write-ins. There's been some months. We've had some people reach out. Now, specifically, our dear friend who loves to write in, and we love when Austin does write in. This is Austin Almond. Hi, Austin Almond.
Hey, Austin.
Austin has actually sent us a lot of things recently, and I have not done a good job of keeping up with the Instagram because we haven't been recording. It's been sort of off my mind, so I haven't been posting, so I haven't been checking it. So I apologize, Austin, but here we go. Here are some questions that were raised by Austin Almond. Okay.
Bring
so Austin first asked, and I did answer him on this message, but I said we were going to bring it up here and we didn't. Austin wanted to know whether Austin should see Beetlejuice or Six for his birthday.
On Broadway?
On Broadway, I assume.
Six is what I'm going for.
Six is 100% the
only
answer.
I'm dying to see Six. It seems like such a great fucking idea, which also got its start at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And sounds great and looks great. And the Tony performance was great. And I listen to the songs sometimes and it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Beetlejuice makes me want to vomit a little bit. And I think part of it is Alex Brightman, but part of it is also just like, we don't need it. Like, delete it.
Well, we keep talking about blockbuster movie, the musical. Like, I think we're all kind of sick of that.
Yeah.
Well, it is. And the thing about Beetlejuice, and I've only seen clips, and I've sat down and listened to the cast recording, is that it misses the point. It doesn't capture the magic of what that movie was. And the magic was that it was a movie. In large part, it was the idea that world was being created, that it was being created without any CGI at all. It was all handmade and stop motion and all that. And you just can't capture that magic and live.
I just remember the cartoon more than anything.
I remember the cartoon.
I watched the fuck out of that Beetlejuice cartoon.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
Except that one, it's so weird because the movie is so very much like Beetlejuice is sort of, we've said it at least three times now, by the way.
Yeah.
So he's here. But Beetlejuice is one of those things where, like, the movie is so much, he's a predator. It's bad. He's the bad guy, sort of, right?
Yes.
He's the con man. He's the one trying to marry a 15-year-old. He's, like, all this stuff. And the animated series is very pointedly, like, we're best friends.
Yes.
We go on adventures together with sandworms.
Yeah.
Sandworms? Beetlejuice and Dune are in the same universe.
In the same universe.
I also got a personal question from something I posted on my Instagram, but from a listener who I guess also follows me. Patrick J is their name. Mm-hmm. And he seems to enjoy the podcast, but I posted something about my feelings on the current status of football, actually, specifically. And he sort of reached out well, I like football and I like theater. I'd love to hear, like, your thoughts on this. I'm not going to go through that right now. I'll save that for next episode because I think it's a bigger conversation that the two of you will have really great insight on as well. So let's save it. Patrick, I'm sorry, but we're going to save it for our next episode.
Thanks for the question, Patrick.
Yeah, but we appreciate
the
question.
It's a great question, and it's one that I've thought a lot about.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Exactly. I think you guys will have great opinions on this. So we'll save it. But Patrick, appreciate the listens. Besides that, let's pivot over. I'm not going to come up with a quality pivot right now. I don't have a segue. But I'm going to tell you the new intro. You ready
for
it?
Give it.
Okay. Y'all don't have to do anything different. It should be the exact same. But let me know if you like it. Okay? Here we go. Welcome to Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
And this season, each week we're getting together to discuss and debate the intersection of theater and film.
Film.
Because where do we see plays and musicals? In a
theater.
Theater.
And where do we see movies? In a
theater.
That's right. And how does AMC spell theater?
Wrong.
That's right.
Incorrectly. Incorrectly.
They're wrong.
I love you, AMC, but you're wrong. And also, the new Nicole Kidman thing, they cut it up too much.
It's better. It's okay.
It's no.
It's better. They need to shorten it. We love you, Nicole. Arnar, we love you.
Arnar.
But welcome. We're so glad to be here. This week, we're discussing something that I think was Scott's idea. Am I right?
Yes.
I think it feels eventually right. Got there, yeah.
I think yeah. And we're going to do like a sister episode to this later, which is very exciting. But we were like, where do we begin with the intersection of film and theater? And Scott was sort of like, well, what about like an actor or actors who are very much known in both realms? And the first thing that came to mind was the sirs and the dames, mm-hmm. right? I mean, this is too perfect. And so Scott said, what if we do an episode on Patty Stu, Patrick Stewart, and Ian McKellen together as the sirs? Now, there are other sirs. You got Jacoby. You got people, but these are the two. They have such a beautiful relationship, and mm-hmm. their careers are so fun. And Marvel, which we've talked tons about on this podcast. So that's what our episode's on today. The sirs, Patty Stu and Ian Mix.
Yeah.
What do we want to do? I don't remember how to podcast anymore. It's been so long.
Should we start with Scott stuff?
Scott.
Scottpedia.
Scottpedia, I missed
I got that. Welcome back, Scottpedia.
All right. The stinger. We love the stinger.
So I got a lot. I got them each individually a little bit, and then I got them both together. So we'll go through all that and jump in whenever you got some comments. The first thing I'm going to point out real quick, and I just want to give a shout out to the podcast What Is Music. They will never listen to this, but they're three British guys, and they do entire seasons devoted to single bands or musicians. It's a fantastic thing. But they frequently will talk about America, and they'll get into their American accents and make fun of stuff. So I just want to start off by saying I apologize for some of these proper names that I'm going to mispronounce.
Yeah.
But these two motherfuckers are British as fuck.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's start off with Sir Patrick Stewart, OBE, born 13 July 1940. That's the first thing. They do their dates wrong there. I was freaked out because they said
the metric way of doing it, huh?
They talk about the 11-9. Like, what? 11-9? It took me forever to process.
Never forget. Them. Forget never.
Yeah, exactly.
Forget never, yeah.
Anyway, Patty Stu is an English actor whose career has spanned seven decades in theater, film, television, and video games. He has received accolades throughout his career, including two Laurence Olivier Awards, a Grammy Award, as well as nominations for a Tony Award, three Golden Globe Awards, four Emmy Awards, and three Screen Actors Guild Awards. He received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 1996 and was knighted by Queen Elizabeth for services to drama in 2010.
Patrick's... Oh, wow. That's more recent than I thought.
That was, later than I would have expected.
Yeah, they tend to be a little older. Patrick Stewart was born in Merfield in the West Riding of Yorkshire on 13 July 1940. He was the son of Gladys.
Good year for wine.
A great year for wine.
And war.
And war, yes, very much. which will have a huge impact on little Patty Stu.
You don't
Patty
see.
Stu. Yeah, I do.
You don't see.
He was the son of Gladys. I'm sorry.
I love a Gladys.
She was a weaver and a textile worker. And Alfred Stewart, who was a regimental sergeant major in the British Army during the Second World War.
I bet he was a babe.
I mean, he's hot. His parents have to be hot, right?
Right, yeah.
Gladys and Fred.
Exactly.
Gladys and Fred.
Glad and Fred.
Glad and Fred. He has two older brothers named Jeffrey, spelled with G, and Trevor. Jeffrey and Trevor.
I'm looking up his brothers, see if they're sexy.
Yeah, are they hot?
Yeah, right.
Geoffrey Stewart.
He spent, this is where it gets a little dark. He spent much of his childhood in a poor household in Jarrow, where he experienced domestic violence at the hands of his father, who suffered pretty severe PTSD, but that wasn't going to be diagnosed for a very long time.
It's called shell shock back then, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah. But even until today, much of Patrick Stewart's philanthropic work is with organizations who combat domestic violence, who help domestic violence survivors. So, yeah, way to go. Stewart attended Crowley's Junior and Infant School, a Church of England affiliated school in Murfield. He later attributed his acting career to his English teacher there, Cecil Dormant. Let's give a shout out to Cecil.
Cecil.
Like I tell, these are English wow. as fuck motherfuckers.
I love
that. And Cecil put a, who, quote, put a copy of Shakespeare in Stewart's hand and told him to get up and perform. He entered Murfield's Secondary Modern School in 1951 at age 11 and continued to study drama there. Around the same time, he met and befriended fellow actor Brian Blessed. What?
Hey.
I know, right? When they were like kids, children. They met at a drama course.
Hang out together.
Right?
That's true.
Wait till we get to Ian. the school was called Mytholmroyd. Patrick Stewart's first professional stage appearance was on 19 May 1959 at the Theatre Royal Bristol for the Bristol Old Vic Company, playing Cutpurse, a thief, among the audience for the play within a play in Cyrano de Bergerac, directed by John Hale, who would go on to have a huge career as well.
Right.
Stewart became a member of this Royal Shakespeare Company in 1966, remaining with him until 1982. He is most famous for playing Captain Jean-Luc Picard on Star Trek The Next Generation and Professor Charles Xavier in the S-Men movies.
I don't know. Yes. He might be most famous for being himself on American Dad.
Right.
Basically. What's his name? Avery Bullock or something?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly
it. Yeah. That's a good one. Also, here's a question for you.
Yeah.
When did he lose his hair? Because look at this guy.
Whoa! Look at that hair.
He's sexy with his full hair. Now, that might be a wig.
He's
sexy, bald, though. But it looks
He started losing it. When he was doing the acting Shakespeare PBS show where they were going through everything, he was pretty much bald by then.
Got it.
So okay. He lasted pretty
sexy
early.
Either way. That's fine. Even when
he's
rocking
better without
his
hair,
the weird 80s 90s dad look with just the back hair and nothing on top, like he's hot.
Yeah,
that's his Picard look, and I'm all
he's pure sex.
Professor Pure Sex.
How about that picture I sent you guys of Sir Ian and Professor the dame Sam. Herself? Like, oh my God.
So
someone sold that to me on Facebook like a year or so ago, and it's been saved on my phone ever since.
Oh my God, yeah.
I want to kiss them both.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So,
it kind of reminds me of this picture, though, that I had in my room growing up of E.T. and Michael Jackson holding.
Yeah, we've talked about that. I fucking love it. I remember that. I also had that poster.
Yeah,
see, now I have a picture of Dame Judi Dench playing Hippolyta at the Globe. It's black and white, so she must be in her 20s or something.
That's thirsty. That makes
She's in full. It's a full Elizabethan garb, and she's just beautiful. Yeah,
I just came.
Mm-hmm.
I just came a little bit. Cut that
all right.
out.
No.
Quadruple it. Quadruple it.
Yes.
Quadruple it.
Quadruple take, which
we
will talk about later.
I came. thanks for that. I appreciate you doing that. Okay.
Moving on to Sir Ian Murray McKellen.
Murray. That's cute.
As in
OBE, born 25 May 1939. So he's a hint older than Sir Paddy Stew.
A smidgen.
He's an English actor with a career spanning more than seven decades. He is noted for his roles on the screen and stage in genres ranging from Shakespeare to modern theater to popular fantasy and science fiction. He is regarded as a British cultural icon and was knighted by Queen Elizabeth in 1991.
Ooh, oh, way before Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if there's a little competition there.
Oh, we'll get into it.
Mm-hmm. When did he get his star, though?
I don't know if he's got one. It doesn't mention
I bet he does.
He may or may not. Because your fan club's got to go and buy it. It's not an official thing.
I wonder when mine's going up.
Well,
I already bought it for you. It's coming out next week. It's right next to Mary Louise Parker's.
You're over at the La Brea Bend, CJ.
Yeah.
Listen, exactly. I'm fine with that. I like La Brea.
No, it's all right. Let's see. Ian has received numerous accolades, including a Tony Award, 6 Olivier Awards, a Golden Globe Award, as well as nominations for 2 Academy Awards, 5 BAFTA Awards, and 5 Emmys.
And you might already have this in your thing, so sorry if I'm stealing this thunder. No. But I do know the fact that in 1999, he broke the record, and this is fucked up. He was the first ever openly gay male actor to be nominated for an Oscar at the time.
Oh, that's right.
In 1999. That's crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah, nuts.
He was born 25th of May 1939 in Burnley, Lancashire, the son of Marjorie Lois and Dennis Murray McKellen. He was
so cute.
Another Murray.
Yeah, right. He was their second child with a sister, Jean, who's 5 years his senior. McKellen's father was a civil engineer and lay preacher and was of Protestant, Irish, and Scottish descent. Both of McKellen's grandfathers were preachers, and his great-great-grandfather, James McKellen, was a strict evangelical Protestant minister.
Yes,
of course. Yeah, and gay, too.
And probably gay, too.
Yeah.
McKellen attended Bolton School, the boys' division, of which he is still a supporter, attending regularly to talk to pupils. McKellen's acting career started at Bolton Little Theater, of which he is now the patron. An early fascination with theater was encouraged by his parents, who took him on a family outing to Peter Pan at the Opera House in Manchester when he was 3.
And that was probably one of the early J.M. Barrie. Like, J.M. Barrie would have still been alive, right?
Yeah, we were 3. You're looking Maybe at 1942. Not.
It wouldn't have been the first ever production.
No, but certainly an early one.
What year did you say? I'm sorry, I want to look this up.
It would have been 1942, yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. When he was 9, his main Christmas present was a foldaway wood and Bakelite Victorian theater from Pollock's Toy Theaters with cardboard scenery and wires to push on the cutouts of Cinderella.
That's so cute.
And of Laurence Olivier's reenactment of Shakespeare's Hamlet.
I love it.
In 1958, McKellen, at the age of 18, won a scholarship to St. Catherine's College, Cambridge. No big deal.
Yeah, right.
Where he read English literature. He has since been made an honorary fellow of the college. While at Cambridge, McKellen was a member of the Marlowe Society, where he appeared in 23 plays over the course of 3 years.
Damn.
This is where it gets hot, though. At that young age, he was already giving performances that have since become legendary, such as Justice Shallow in Henry IV, alongside Trevor Nunn and Derek Jacobi.
Cool.
Cymbeline as Posthumus opposite Margaret Drabble as Imogen, and Dr. Faustus during this period. McKellen had already been directed by Peter Hall, John Barton, and Dady Rylands, all of whom who would have a significant impact on McKellen's future career. It was with the Prospect Theater Company that McKellen made his breakthrough performances of Shakespeare's Richard II and Christopher Marlowe's Edward II at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in 1969. So he's doing both. He's playing Richard II and Edward II.
Wow.
He's
great at both.
He's Richard, made though. For both of them.
By the way, Trevor Nunn is still alive and kicking.
Oh, yeah. He's still doing it.
I think he lives in Virginia, and he directs at the Shakespeare place out there.
Yeah.
And he rules. And the old artistic director of the Shakespeare Youth Fest lives out there now, and she works with him all the time. It's really cool.
Oh, that's so cool.
Trevor Nunn rules. Also, J.M. Barrie died in 1937, so he was not alive. I messed that up. I just assumed. But go ahead.
Was Tennessee Williams there?
Was he laughing?
He was laughing.
Let me look it up.
That poor woman. But that production of Edward II caused a storm of protest over the enactment of homosexual Edward's lurid death.
It's a lurid play.
Yeah. And
wow.
Of
or
course,
can be, I guess.
Sir Ian would go on to be in some stuff, do some things. called Lord of the Rings and the Hobbits and the X-Men's and the Marvels.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So this is interesting.
Mr. Holmes. Come on.
Right. Mr. Holmes.
Yeah.
Which I just rewatched and we'll talk about.
Great film. Yeah.
But so Stewart and McKellen had known each other for decades before X-Men.
Yeah.
They met for the first time doing a production of Tom Stoppard's Every Good Boy Deserves Favor at the Royal Shakespeare Company. But they weren't close at the time, and they didn't keep in touch in the intervening years. When they went to go make the X-Men, they had had adjoining trailers, and Stewart said, on those kind of movies, you spend more time sitting in your trailer than you do in front of the camera. So Ian and I hung out together, drinking tea, and maybe in the afternoon something a little stronger.
Aww.
And we got to know each other, and they became friends. And Sir Ian conducted Patrick's wedding.
Officiated
the wedding. And
I know that because there was that big Graham Norton clip that was going around for so long.
Oh,
where
yeah.
Ian McKellen is like, he's like, yeah, I'm not going to do the voice. He's like, yeah, I'm officiating Patrick Stewart's wedding. And they're all like, oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. He goes, yes, I'm marrying Patrick. And everyone went nuts. And it became like a meme for a while. It was really funny.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact that they became friends. And of course, the recent production of Godot and several
other. They kissed at the premiere of Mr. Holmes as a joke based on that.
Yes, yeah, right on, right,
yeah,
right.
They
right.
like open mouth kissed and it was hardcore.
I would love to see them more on. I would love to see them do something else on film together soon, very quickly. Clock is ticking.
Grumpy Old Men.
Grumpy, I'll do it. Yeah. I'd love to see him. I'd love to see him do The Odd Couple.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll talk about more of the stuff that they've done together. I definitely want to talk about their Godot, and all that kind of stuff. In fact, let's do it.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to got?
No. So endeth.
That was fun,
Scott-pedia.
Scott.
So in that ruled. Thank you, Scott. And
my
when
pleasure.
I was in high school, we read Waiting for Godot, as I think a lot of humanities classes do, and whether in high school or college, and we were reading it and we watched the like Beckett on Beckett version or whatever, but then I went looking for other copies of it, and I ended up finding at the Wichita State Library a copy of the Steve Martin Robin Williams one and a copy of the Ian McKellen Patrick Stewart one.
Now
I decided to write my paper on the differences between these two movies.
Cool.
Rather than these two stage productions, rather than doing a true breakdown of Godot.
Yeah.
I got a not great grade on it for that reason, but I had a lot
better.
Of fun writing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're just like two totally different productions on so many levels. And my take on Mr. Holmes as well, which we'll talk about in a bit, but like, they're Waiting for Godot, Ian and Patrick's, was sort of like sleepy Godot and a little bit more like dry and British and right in front of your face. And then obviously Steve Martin and Robin Williams go for the laugh on every line, on every moment.
Sure.
On every...
Mike Nichols directed that production.
That's right. That's right. And, they go all the way, and it's two totally different visions and versions of the show, but it still gets at what the core piece of that puzzle is. And I don't think I've ever really been able to find copies of these ever again. You can find clips on YouTube and stuff.
I know that.
Did you have one that you preferred between the two?
Well, in high school, I preferred the Robin Williams, Steve Martin, because it was more fun to watch.
Sure.
But I think now if I really sat down with it, I think I actually would prefer the Ian and, and Patty, because it's just it's a more of a masterclass than a comedy show.
Sure. Makes sense. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A variety show, if you will. Yeah. But they're both good. They're both great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
I mean,
both
interesting. I mean, that's why we do different productions of great plays.
Americans versus the Brits. Right.
Now, we did all sort of just say, like, we're just going to watch whatever and mm-hmm. we'll just bring shit to the table.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We'll just kind of go for it. So, like, what stuff did y'all watch?
I went and, well, CJ and I had recently done The Hobbit. So
right. You did all three, right?
We did all three in one sitting.
And how much is he in of that?
Oh, he's in quite a bit.
Is he? Yes. Okay, I don't remember those movies at all. I just remember them being a lot.
There are points, there are, you know, stretches where he's out doing shit.
Sure.
Yeah, right. But Gandalfing.
But then I did, I watched the first X-Men.
Yeah.
Which might be one of my favorite endings to any Marvel movie ever.
What's just the final moment?
Just the two of them in his cell playing chess on the plastic chessboard.
That's right. And plastic prison.
I was just like, and the power of those two guys and the simplicity and the elegance of just that moment of coming to terms with being friends and enemies at the same time, being friends and seeing the world entirely differently.
Right.
And it's a really powerful, beautiful moment. And, you know, it makes you root for both of them throughout all the rest of the movies. And in particular that one. But and then I also did Mr. Holmes and Gods and Monsters, which I had not seen in forever.
I've never seen Gods and Monsters. Wow. I gotta check that one out.
Both Mr. Holmes and Gods and Monsters, Bill Condon directing.
That's right. That's right.
What a weird collective career that's been as well.
For sure.
That's
interesting. Yeah, I love Mr. Holmes. I think it's the ultimate, just like the Sleepy Godot. It's sleepy Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
It's just like putters and murmuring and being fucking great. And I love that. I love that movie.
And it so many beautiful themes. The theme of idea of aging, the idea of memory, the idea of loneliness and loss and all that, and I even like Laura Linney in it, and you know how I am about Laura Linney.
No, she's good in that.
She's
one.
Really no. She's a very talented actress.
Laura Linney.
I don't hate her. Well,
she's good when she's good, but then you watch like Congo, and you're like, what's happening?
What are you doing?
Right, like she's like, but no, Laura's good when she's
and
good.
The kid's great in it too.
For sure. What about you, Siege? What kind of stuff did you get into?
Well, I rewatched X-Men and X2.
Yeah. Which one do you prefer?
Probably the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're
both great.
No, because I know I've gone off to both of you about how I feel about Brian Cox.
Do you like Brian Cox? I don't remember.
I like him.
Okay.
I just think he's a one-trick pony. Much like Jennifer Coolidge, which is gonna get me taken out to pasture and shot.
No, everyone's very aware of Jennifer Coolidge being a one trick pony, but that's kind of why she works in things like White Lotus, because it's like, hey Jennifer, just do Jennifer. And she's
the director was just like, hey, you're on set, just go.
Which is
just
why she
it.
Works in the Christopher Guest stuff, right? It's, is because it's just.
I don't hate her. I don't hate her.
No, I'm not defending even. I'm just like pivoting.
And that's
on
how
what
I feel
saying.
About Brian Cox.
I can mildly agree with that. I don't know that I can name anything Brian Cox is in besides like. I don't know. I guess Succession, right? That's Brian Cox. But like, I haven't watched it, so I don't really know.
So the thing that I was thinking of too is talking about their whole careers. I only became aware of them in the latter half of their careers. In fact, probably the first thing I saw both of them in was X-Men. I knew who Patrick Stewart was because Star Wars Next Generation commercials were on all the fucking time. And I knew that was Patrick Stewart. In fact, I did watch most of the first episode of Star Trek. So, like, I'm down to chat about
TNG.
That.
TNG. Okay.
But the one thing... So I did The
you
Hobbit.
Met Q.
And then I... Yes, Q, which was bizarre Q. to listen to that. But I tripped through Fellowship and Two Towers in the Ian parts because he's not there for the first half, the second half of Fellowship. Right. And then out of sheer curiosity, I went and watched Apt Pupil because the other thing that
Bryan Singer movie. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Before I ever saw Ian McKellen in anything, I remember his face on the VHS cover at the one place in Bluffs that you could rent movies for Apt Pupil. Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to do this. I had, yes. And I had no idea it was a Stephen King book until I watched it.
Right. It's a Stephen King novella. It's like a short, it's like pretty short, I think. And it's, I've never read it,
I've got
Brad Renfro,
that movie.
Who is an actor who, unfortunately we lost,
2008,
too early.
He was only like 25 years old or something.
Yeah, very young, very sad. But, one of my favorite actors when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Specifically, he had done, Tom and Huck.
Oh, okay.
Which was a really big movie for me. It's Disney's Tom Sawyer movie with Jonathan Taylor Thomas and Brad Renfro.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a big fan of that movie. And then he was in a movie which I rewatched recently, which is not good, but when I was 14 was one of my favorite movies ever.
Uh-huh.
The Larry Clark movie Bully.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah,
you guys
ever
seen Bully?
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Yeah.
Bully when I was 14 was like, same with Kids, the other Larry Clark movie. I was like, these movies are it. Like,
this is, oh, yeah.
This is raw.
I mean,
this
Kids
is real.
Kids was so
Kids
raw.
Kids is raw, right? And then you think, and Harmony Korine wrote it, so you're like, ugh, yeah, this is crazy. And then I watched Bully the other day. I've been on like a Brad Renfro. I watched Apt People as well, Siege.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished it, and I felt the same way about Apt People. I finished the movie Bully, and I went, I honestly can't believe I ever liked that movie, and also, like, I'm a little traumatized that I just watched it again. Like, it was really harsh.
It's why I won't go back and watch the Ace Ventura movies. I'm like, I don't need to see how poorly these aged, even though I know that's two completely different kinds of movies.
No, they didn't age well, but the Apt Pupil is tough, because at the end of the day, I guess I don't really know what it's trying to say.
No, it was a very all-over-the-place movie.
It's tough.
And then I just wanted to announce the two new things I watched for Patrick Stewart was I did the first episode, most of the first episode of Star Trek. I just honestly ran out of time. But I watched the 1984 Dune, finally.
Oh, good.
Finally. Everyone's been saying, like, you love
that.
Dune. Have you seen the Lynch movie?
Who is he in it? He's
Idaho? Gurney Halleck.
Oh, he's Gurney. Oh.
Yeah.
He's Josh Brolin.
He's Josh Brolin.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't watched that movie since I was a kid. That's a good
But
one.
Then going through their lists, I was like, oh, God, I know they have so much. I don't know if I've seen that much. And I've actually seen a lot more movies that they were in than I realized. So
yeah. Well, that's the thing is because like Scott was saying, their career is so heavy and theater wise, it's so heavy, but mm-hmm. the things they've chosen to do for film for the most part, actually recently, Patrick Stewart kind of just says yes to anything, but the two of them, when you really look at their IMDb, it's mostly just these heavy hitting things. Mm-hmm. And then
lots
some like random TV and random.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then a lot of Shakespeare and a lot of adaptations and a lot, you know. But that's why we love them. And that's why we're talking about them. By the way, I just have to say this because for people who don't know, obviously you can go Google it. But Apt Pupil is about a young man, Brad Renfro, who is obsessed with the Holocaust to a unhealthy degree. And he realizes that his neighbor, Ian McKellen, was an Auschwitz...
he's a war criminal.
War criminal.
I think it's off the tails of, like, what was that? It was that doc that came in a couple years ago about, like, the enemy next door or something, and it was something that was going on in the 80s where they discovered this dude.
Oh, that, yeah.
That was
yeah,
a Nazi
were,
war criminal.
There were strangely several of those.
Yeah. Remember The Reader? With there's the book, but then Kate Winslet and Ralph Fiennes movie...
Yes.
Kind of a good movie, but it's weirdly the same where it's about this kid who like falls in love with this woman and then one day finds out that she's a Nazi and he's like, oh, fuck, I don't know. Anyway.
Oh, wow. That's like Rey kissing Kylo Ren in the third last set of Star Wars.
No, it was earned.
No, that was earned. That was earned over nine movies.
She was kissing a space Nazi.
No, it was earned over nine movies of space fairy tales.
No, Ray, no.
We need some action. No, Ray. CJ, I think, mentioned it a little bit, but Bailey, what was your first memory of these two? What was the first thing you saw either of the men?
My brothers, who are 8 and 10 years older than me, were Star Trek TNG nerds, total dweebs. And I have some of my earliest memories are down in the dark basement staying up to watch Next Generation. I knew who Q was. You know, before I knew who a lot of, you know, Marvel villains were, right?
Like, sure.
I always have loved Patrick Stewart. I've always been a massive fan.
I've seen him in Men in Tights first.
Men in Tights. Okay.
Definitely. I might have seen him in that first.
That's right. Anyway, he's Richard the Lionheart, right?
He's sexy as fuck in the end, and he kisses Maid Marian in the end.
Yeah, I want to kiss him.
Anyway, go on, Bailey.
I want to kiss Patty Stew.
I do too.
But I just remembered something, but okay, I'll save it because I'll remember it. I had an interaction with Patrick Stewart one time in Los Angeles. Anyway, it was momentary, but it was great. That probably would have been the first thing for him. Ian McKellen, I think the first time I truly clocked him was Magneto. Like the first time I was like, who is this guy?
Right.
It would have had to be because I can't think of anything else from like my earlier childhood where he clicked.
Mm-hmm.
But then once I found out who he was and like once he was Gandalf and then I remember
because literally the next year is Gandalf and I'm like, right, oh, right. It's Magneto. Like when
and
I saw that movie,
the most frustrating thing on the planet for me was being a nerdy, theater nerd, film nerd who knew every actor and knew, you know, whatever. And in high school and college, the amount of times people would be like, right, the guy who plays Gandalf and Dumbledore. And I'd be like, no. And
they'd
be like,
yes,
that's the same guy. No, CJ, what's insane, and maybe it's a Kansas thing, I don't know, because I've never experienced it out here, but when I was living in Kansas, like, the amount of times that conversation would come up is profound. I'd be like, guys,
I'm
can
sure
we
it's
all
the same
just, like,
I'm
learn
from.
How to Google shit? Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
Insane.
Insane.
But, what about you, Scott? What were, like, your first memories of it?
So this is super nerdy, but I remember being a kid and my parents watching the PBS Playing Shakespeare series, which was the RSC actors, like, you know,
Antony and Cleopatra.
How to scan, like, it was literally them in a studio.
That one.
Like,
yes.
Like going through how to scan and
I know what,
it means and what each individual character means. And both of them were in that. So I kind of knew
right
who they were.
I wish my parents watched shit like that when I was growing up.
I just like remember it. And then
Patrick Stewart and LeVar Burton were in a like live BBC, it was on PBS is how I watched it, but live Antony and Cleopatra one time. And they're
cool.
Just like kind of like side characters, but they're both in it. And I remember we were watching it because my brother was like, these two Star Trek dudes are in this
Star Trek
Shakespeare
dudes
thing
are in
that's
it,
playing
yeah.
tonight. I was like, great. Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
But then I was a very young kid when Amadeus came out and I was obsessed with it. And so went and got the play.
Yeah.
Because I learned it was a play.
Right.
And then from that, I was like, and there were pictures in the play, in the published play of
and
Ian McKellen.
And Ian's the original
Salieri. Yeah,
right?
Won
yeah.
the Tony for it.
Oh, yeah. Right, right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I was kind of aware of who he was. Then Patrick Stewart, like I said, I kind of had been aware of it. Then I'd seen Lynch's Dune.
Yeah.
So I knew him from that. And then Next Generation came out not too far after that. And I was like, oh, who is that? And it took me a while to put it together, who it was. But then, yeah. And then I think, obviously, you know, Lord of the Rings and Magneto. And
sure.
And Gods and Monsters. I remember going, like, that was kind of a big deal because people were like, oh, he's kind of back.
Yeah.
That he, you know, because he's, you know, he didn't do a lot of movies before that, you know, TV stuff.
The summer that I was studying in London in 2005, it was a scandal because Ian McKellen had said yes to, like, I don't know, a 10-episode arc on a British soap opera. And everyone was like, he's going to ruin his career. And I even remember at that point being like, I think he can do whatever the fuck he wants.
Totally.
Exactly. Okay, so absolutely. Just real quick, my little interaction was with Patty Smith.
Tell.
So when I first moved out here, I was a dog walker for very rich people.
Okay.
Specifically Doris Roberts, who passed while I was in her, as you know, well, she was my client.
You killed Doris Roberts.
I killed Doris Roberts. Anna Kendrick's neighbor.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Or excuse me, Leah Michelle's neighbor, Anna Kendrick. I actually did Anna Kendrick's dog for a while, but Leah Michelle's neighbor, so I would see her, and it was a weird time in my life.
Mm.
But I was young, and I was, you know, it was 10 years ago, and I had just moved here, and I was trying to figure things out, and I had a dog in my car, and I was panicking because I was running really late, and it was some rich... Okay, I probably shouldn't say this. It was the daughter of the owner of the Rams Bulldog.
Jesus Christ.
Okay.
So I was like, whose name? I don't even remember. So I had this bulldog in the car, and I was on, I want to say like Sunset Boulevard or something like that, driving. And I was freaking out because I wasn't going to get there on time. And I turned right, and I realized I had turned at the wrong right into the wrong neighborhood. And I was like, fuck. So I flipped around really quickly. And as I was flipping around, this really nice maroon Corvette, or whatever, I call it a Corvette, it looked like a Corvette, pulled up, like, right at me, almost hit me, and stopped real quick. And I was like, oh, no, because it was totally my fault, fully my fault. And I looked out, and I waved, and I went, oh, I'm so sorry, and I froze, because it was Patrick's. And I was like, oh, shit. And he literally nodded at me, smiled, and just waved as I slowly turned. And then I just kind of like, I started bowing to him. I didn't know what to do. So I just started going, okay, thank you. Thank you, Patty Stu. And then he drove away and I drove away. And
Patrick,
I just like,
Stewart doesn't believe in road rage, y'all.
I was like, he's the kindest human alive. And my heart was racing and it was amazing. Anyway, that's my Patty Stu story. And I'm sticking to it.
My first LA celebrity sighting was fucking Paris Hilton.
Wow. Well, that was a good one.
Hot.
Very hot.
Hot.
Mine was Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails.
Actually, sick as fuck.
That from is Nine cool. Inch Nails.
My second one was, was kind of Dustin Hoffman and then Tracy Lords, the porn actress, who I met at the same party. Yeah.
Also, Reznor's score for The Killer this year.
Great.
It was great.
Yeah.
Anyway,
really good.
Okay. Here's the question, the big question.
Okay.
What is your favorite and least favorite performance of each of these dudes?
Ugh.
Help me out.
Okay.
Siege?
My favorite for Ian McKellen is probably Fellowship or Two Towers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's phenomenal. Yeah. He's. Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many things that I quote to this day. And honestly, I think it's just because while I feel like I've watched a bunch of his stuff, I haven't watched nearly enough. Mm-hmm. My least favorite, and it's not his fucking fault, it's the movie's fault, is either Cats, just because that movie was such an unholy mess, mm-hmm. but that's not his fault. Or I remembered today, he was the fucking voice of Jorgen Bjarnason in the failed Golden Compass,
that's
which
right.
that movie had everything it needed and it sucked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's bad.
So, yeah. I just don't know that he can do a bad performance.
Right. Winsy bad. The definition of winsy bad.
Yeah.
I would, it's not an argument as much of a throw in. I would say Return of the King. He has some of those scenes with Pippin, or is it
mm-hmm.
Mary?
Mm-hmm. He's with Pippin.
Yeah,
where he's battling the Witch King.
Yeah, and when they're up in the actual, is it Gondor or where they're actually up in the castle and the dude's eating the tomatoes and all this shit. Like, that is some of the best stuff in Return of the King also. Mm-hmm. So it's
that speech about death. The speech about death. Oh,
the swift sunrise.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd give it to, I would maybe say Two Towers, Return of the King for me over Fellowship and Two
it's
Towers.
It's just fun watching him battle
I don't mean
Christopher
to split
Lee
hairs,
in Fellowship.
But technically speaking, he's playing two different characters.
You're right.
Gandalf the Grey is a different character from Gandalf the White.
You are right.
Yeah, so
it's still,
I just...
it's still him playing it, though. You know, his performance across the three. No, you're right. Absolutely. You, Scott, what's your, oh, wait, well, Siege,
should we just
have
do Ian McKellen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
the
yeah.
least, like I said, the least are, I, really Cats was just fucking weird.
Except
garbage.
He's great in Cats.
He's great. That's the thing. I don't think he's
That's
bad in anything
yeah.
I've seen. And then, like I said, Golden Compass. I will say, as far yeah. as Jornik Bjornason went, when I heard he was the voice of him, his voice doesn't fit that character for me, but I'm yeah. also a massive nerd for those books.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, Scat.
All right, so for Sir Patrick, and I thought about this a lot.
Oh, and I didn't do Patrick's. Were we going to do Ian and then do Patrick?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll do Ian first. Yeah. So Ian, for me, it's that Return of the King, I think. Any of those movies, any of Lord of the Rings is fine. My least favorite is Cats, if we're going to do it that way, then... Yes, but also Apt Pupil.
Yeah.
Just is kind of a mess. And he's great because he's just infinitely watchable.
He's
but
playing
he's not...
a completely irredeemable character yeah. now, which I kind of appreciated, where it's yeah. like usually, like, even when he's playing Magneto, like, you get his backstory and he's a little Thanos-y, but it's
well,
like,
even in Gods and Monsters,
I
like,
get
that
it,
is
but...
not a good dude. He yeah. does some shady shit and
okay,
creepy
shit.
Okay,
I haven't
shit.
Seen Gods and Monsters. Okay, so go on.
But it also really great performance. So those are my two Ians.
What about you, Paige?
My two Ians are, I think my favorite is actually split between the, you know, Gandalf, the white.
Mm-hmm. The white.
The white.
The white.
And I do... Okay, there's this movie that I don't know if I'd call it his best performance, but there's a movie that his performance really stuck with me. It's called The Good Liar. It came out like 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
With Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
I think he's very good in that. I think he's weirdly good as Cogsworth in Beauty and the Beast, which is shit. I think he's actually weirdly good as that.
He's great in it. I just hated Ewan McGregor playing Lumiere.
Oh, well,
I wanted
shit.
It to be someone else.
That's really tough. That's yeah. really tough.
He is an adorable Cogsworth.
My least favorite Ian is a hot take. I think he's bad, and I think everyone is bad in The Da Vinci Code.
Oh, I almost
I
put that on there.
Forgot about The Da Vinci yeah. Code.
I think it's a bad movie with bad performances.
It's a bad movie.
I think Tom Hanks is bad. I think everyone's bad in that
yeah.
movie. I think, and Angels yeah. and Demons is worse.
Oh, I haven't seen Angels and Demons.
Angels and Demons is so
I've only
much
read the book. The
I think they made the third one, too.
But the books
there's
are
a third
crit.
One?
There's a third one. Yeah, I forget what it's called.
I did, too.
But yeah.
Jesus and Satan.
There's like four other books, too, with that character.
Aw, Dan Brown.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we love Dan Brown on this podcast. There's also this movie that I never finished that I could assume is probably his actual worst performance. It's a movie that I rented because I had to watch everything that came through my Blockbuster when I was a manager at Blockbuster when I was 17
sure.
in Wichita, Kansas. So it was called Never Was.
Mm.
And it's Ian McKellen playing sort of this like goofy, like, sprightly hobo man, and then there's Brittany Murphy,
okay,
as like a young dreamer,
okay,
and Aaron
this
Eckhart,
is Brittany Murphy, okay,
weird,
and John William Hurt,
okay,
and
Bill
there's like
Hurt.
A bunch of random people in it, Billy Hurt, the late great, and it's pretty awful. I think it has like a 3% on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's like, it's like actual shit. But he's in that, so I assume that's probably his worst. I don't remember him at all in it, but he's there. And obviously there's X-Men and all that. So I love him in X-Men.
Yeah.
Okay.
Patrick
the
Stewart.
Other one, Patty yeah. Stowe.
Y'all might roll your eyes at me for this, but honestly, my favorite Patrick Stewart is fucking his performance as an American Dad.
Oh, he's amazing.
He is an actor of such gravitas and fame, and the shit that they get him to say
yeah.
is so ridiculous and hilarious. And I personally think American Dad is greater than Family Guy. I really, really like American Dad and have probably
You're
at this
correct.
Point watched more of it.
You're correct.
But he's so fucking good in that. And yeah, my least favorite is Dune. I mean, like, I'm glad I finally saw Dune, and the only reason why he's not great in it is because he's so underused. He's barely in it.
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned it to you, Scott, the golden age of, because it's the complete opposite now, of taking an epic book and smashing it into 2 hours.
Right.
Where we just watched The Hobbit, which is what, 250 pages, and it's 8 hours long.
Yeah.
Like, it's gone the completely opposite end of the spectrum. And I'm glad I finally saw Lynch's Dune, but I don't need to see it ever again. I'll say that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Okay, Scat.
Okay, so for my favorite Patty Stew, I'm going with Next Generation. Wow, I'm going to say the show. It changed, like, because even though the original had enjoyed success with the movies that were pretty good, there was still always kind of this jokiness to it, this sort of wink and nod. And Next Generation came around, and it got so much heavier.
Yeah.
So much heavier, and he carries it. And those episodes where it's just a Picard episode.
Yeah.
Whether it's the one where he goes and he lives the Borg, the one where he goes and he lives his entire rest of his life.
Yep.
And then at the end, when he dies, he goes back to the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. So he's.
May
lived,
I say, that first episode I watched, it reminded me of the Doctor Who that came 20 years later.
It's very.
Oh, yeah.
Doctor Who is very in debt to TNG, I would argue.
Yeah. I'm going to watch it. I got to get Paramount now. But
TNG is also
it.
In debt to the original Doctor Who.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
So there's this great cyclical thing going on.
Yeah, I love that.
But yeah, just, you know, the torture episode where David Warner is the torturer, by the way, is just, you know, there are three lights, you know, it's so good and so much better than the rest of the cast. I mean, they're all great in their own right, but like he's just.
And I like the TNG movies. I know some people don't. I think Nemesis is actually pretty good. I know a lot of people aren't a fan. I like Nemesis. I also think. Generations is weirdly interesting, but
First Contact rules,
and that's a Patrick Stewart vehicle. I mean, that is his movie. You know,
there's one of them that's real. What's the one with F. Murray Abraham? That's the one that's butt. That's really bad. I think that's the one right before Nemesis. I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, but Generations is okay. First Contact is really cool.
Insurrection maybe is
Insurrection is the one that sucks a dick. Yeah,
that's
bad. Sucks a dick.
Okay, so
my least favorite is Dune.
Oh yeah, what's your least favorite?
Dune. All right.
Yeah.
Sure. My most favorite is not necessarily his best, but something I love. Green Room.
Hmm.
Green Room.
Yeah.
He plays the leader of a apt people-esque. He plays the leader of a neo-Nazi gang.
Hmm.
And this band, it's Anton Yelchin's final film. Or at least one of the last he shot.
Yeah.
And this band goes to play at this little venue, and while they're there hanging out in the green room, they realize that everyone at the venue is neo-Nazi, and they're like, fuck, like maybe we should get out of here. But when they start to leave, everyone gets angry, and it becomes like a hardcore movie, and it's really, really fun. But it's all them just like stuck in the green room of this venue being like, what do we do? There's all these neo-Nazis, and Patrick Stewart is like the leader, and he's just so minute and has like maybe 10 lines in it, but he's omnipresent in the movie, and he's phenomenal. I also really, as a kid, my favorite, I would have said The Pagemaster, because he plays Adventure, the book.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The voice of that. I really love that movie. And
the
then
King
my
Arthur
least...
one, too, was fun.
Excalibur?
Oh, yeah. The kid who would be king.
The kid who would be king.
He plays adult Merlin.
I was thinking about the sexy King Arthur one.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
The Excalibur is super sexy.
Yes, yes.
A lot of incest.
He's also, like, he's done a lot of narrator stuff, which I'll get to the thing I like the least, but he's done a ton of it. Like, he's the narrator of Ted, one and two.
Yes. That's right.
And he plays the narrator who is also Bill Shakespeare in Romeo and Juliet.
Oh,
adorable.
Right.
Yeah, things like that. I also really, I've never watched I, Claudius all the way through, but I know he's great in that, he and Derek. And then the Hollow Crown, he's John of Gaunt in Richard II.
Right.
And he's great. Mm. My least favorite thing that he has ever done, I think, is probably the TV miniseries Moby Dick.
Oh, okay. I saw that on the list and was wondering.
I watched it as a kid.
Does he play Ahab?
Yeah. Okay. I watched it as a kid with my family because I had done, within that year or two, I had just done Moby Dick the musical at school.
You've talked about
which
it
is,
before.
By the way, like a spoof, like gay pride musical. Like,
yes,
it's not even,
I love
you know,
it.
It's
I love
just
it.
Like this man in search of his penis. And it's hilarious, but we were eighth graders. And Moby Dick, the made-for-TV miniseries, or whatever it was, is pretty rough.
Okay.
And his makeup is kind of bad, and it's just, it's not.
The production value is so crappy on it, yeah.
It's low. Yeah. So that's probably my least favorite thing. Anyway, so I'm glad we did that. We should, there's not, like, a ton we can do. What else do we want
to
do?
I have a question I wanted to pose.
Oh, yeah.
I have always viewed the two of them together. Obviously, sure. They've had their own roles and they're famous in their own right. How are they different as actors? Because obviously they're great British men with deep voices and gravitas and all of this stuff.
One's bald.
Well, no, I'm more.
Fucks women. One.
Okay, yes. Fucks women. Yes, yes. I know all that. But like the one thing I could come up with is Patrick Stewart feels more that he could do more character actor stuff. Mm. Am I wrong on that? Like, what do you guys... I'm talking, like, acting styles and, like, what they offer as far as roles and stuff.
I think it's funny because a little while back, Bailey and I watched Time Bandits.
Yeah.
Okay.
That has Sir Ralph Richardson as the supreme being who shows up at the end. Considered one of the three greats of the 20th century. It was him, like, Olivier, and John
and Gielgud.
Yeah.
Okay. And Gielgud.
And they said out of all of them, that Ralph Richardson could just do it. Mm-hmm. And that what he did was that he would make the audience feel like they were better than him. Mm. And Olivier made the audience feel like he was better than them.
Okay.
And so it was this thing. And I think that it might come easier to Ian, Sir Ian. I think Sir Ian may be more talented, and I think Sir Patrick maybe has to work a little harder.
I think that's my take too.
Okay.
Mildly, and not even
and like,
let me,
yeah, and I mean
talent.
we're talking about millimeters here.
Yeah. Let me remove the word talent only for my perspective. I'm going to remove the word talent and say I actually think Ian McKellen is better at going, he is better at both gravitas and lightness.
Oh,
now,
okay.
Patrick Stewart, obviously, American Dad, he's very good at, like, owning himself and making fun of himself and being in that light, and I'm not diminishing that. But if you've ever watched Vicious,
to watch that and couldn't get it. I didn't have the right apps.
Oh, okay. I've only ever watched it from going to the library and renting it.
Okay.
That's the only way
it's
I've ever
on,
been
like,
able to
Tubi
find it.
It's only on, like, Tubi or something.
Yeah, of course. Tubi or Play-Doh or whatever the fuck. Or
whatever
yeah.
the fuck.
Whatever the fuck plus. But I found it at the LA Library, or maybe Burbank Library at the time. I found it, and it's two seasons of, like, four episodes each.
Very British.
Or, like, six episodes each, and then a
Christmas special. Yeah.
And it is truly the most delightful show ever. It's Ian. This is my favorite Ian McKellen performance. I changed my mind. This is my favorite Ian McKellen performance. It's Vicious. It's a sitcom with a laugh track, one set, and it's Ian McKellen and Derek Jacobi playing men who are partners, but sort of unstated. They're two gay men who live together, right? But they're roommates, but they're technically like together, but they're technically not because of the time. And
they're roommates, you know, in like the '50s and '60s. Roommates, quotes on the other side.
But then there's, I'm not remembering any of their names all of a sudden, but I guess I could look it up. But it's,
Ramsay Bolton.
That's
from
right.
Game of Thrones. And it's the woman who is Hagrid's, sort of love interest in the fourth, movie of Harry Potter. These people. It is.
She's
genius.
Also in Mr. Holmes, by the way.
Oh, that's right. Oh, okay. Fuck. That's right. Yeah, of course. Yeah. She's amazing. Anyway, I should look her up. But that's my favorite Ian McKellen performance, I've decided.
And the last thing I want to add to anyone listening, do yourself a favor, get on YouTube and look up The Quadruple Take.
With
Patrick Stewart.
Yes, exactly.
It came out. I looked it up. It was like 10 years ago that it came out. But it's fucking funny. And he actually never lands the quadruple take. He ends up doing a quintuple take. But it's fucking hilarious. And it's something that has forever endeared me to him. Because I'm like, he looks like a guy that is fun to hang out with and get high with.
100%.
So, not that Ian McKellen wouldn't be. But I haven't seen any funny videos of him on YouTube. So
look up Graham Norton videos of the two of them on together. It's hilarious.
Okay.
It's the best of times. Okay. It's so much fun. Also, hot take.
Yeah.
Now, I love this movie a lot more than a lot of people do. But I think Patty Stew is fantastic in his minute and a half in Multiverse of Madness.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
He's really good in that. And
well, everyone lost their shit when he showed up.
Right. The rumor is he's very much in Deadpool Wolverine.
Word.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that's exciting.
Well, and anyway. I didn't mention that I had done my Logan rewatch as well.
Oh, shit.
And
I mean, that's his,
maybe
that's
his best performance. My favorite will always be Picard, but he's fantastic in Logan. That he didn't get no love for that. He should have gotten an Oscar nom for that. He really should have.
Yeah,
bullshit,
absolutely,
man.
But if you look it's at his bigotry, IMDb, dude. Now, he does those big things, but almost everything he does is like low budget, small budget. He and two other people, like, he was just in a movie a year or two ago called Coda, not the best picture winning.
No,
Coda,
but
Coda, which is just he and Katie Holmes, and they're playing piano, and that's all I know about it. But he does a lot of that kind of stuff. He does a lot of like smaller indie films and just like doing favors for people. And I'm just like, yeah, let's all fucking hang out.
Yeah,
I want to eat sushi off of your abs. Let's, I didn't say that. Let's, what else do we need to do?
I got some spotlights.
Oh, you want to spotlight some LA theater?
Yes.
LA Spotlight.
Okay, so friend of the pod, Tracy Paleo, Gaia on the Move, has asked me to punch the 54th annual LADCCs. That is the Los Angeles Drama Critics Circle. For the first time ever, they are doing a completely online streaming of the awards. They're hoping that not just people in LA will watch it. So everyone, please join Monday, April 8th at 8 o'clock Pacific time. And you can get it on Instagram or Facebook Live at LA Drama Critics. Free and available to everyone. Over 50% of the nominees are women or members of diverse communities. And I'll make sure we get the link in there of the nominees list and all that stuff. But please join us, y'all. LA is doing some exciting theater and they want everyone to hear about it. And finally, the show that I've been working on since the beginning of the year, A Froggy Becomes by Becky Wahlstrom. World premiere at the Open Fist Theater Company. I assistant directed, did some choreography for it. It's 70 minutes. It is a delightful one act. It's at the Atwater Village Theater. Go to openfist.org. Plays through Saturday, April 13th, Fridays and Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 7.
Open Fist engages with us on Instagram a lot, so I appreciate that. Open Fist
awesome.
Rules.
Yeah, thanks, Open Fist. Martha Denson, yay.
Scott, you got anything?
Yeah, I'm going to start shouting out The One, which will be the next main production at Sacred Fools, at the Sacred Fools or the Broadwater Black Box. It's The One by Joe Hernandez-Kolsky. It's a one-man show about life after COVID, his sex life, his biracial identity, his journey through this world, post-pandemic. And it's going to be directed by Benjamin Byron Davis of cool. Guardians of the Galaxy 3 fame.
Ooh.
And but it's a really great show. It's going to be really, really cool. And it's going to open April 12th. Keep an eye out at sacredfools.org or sacredfoolsla on Instagram for more information.
Oh, what about Roddy's show?
Oh, yeah. Roddy's show.
Roddy Villegas, the winner of our Theater Playwright Award last year at Fringe. Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I can start. He's doing some of his pieces that we discuss from his radio play, Interrupted Frequencies. They're going to be doing them as a live performance at the Broadwater.
Oh, we covered that.
Yeah, Friday, March 29th at 8 o'clock. I'm not sure if you have more information on that, Scott.
No, that's what I have, exactly.
But I'm going to go, and please join me. We want to cheer Roddy on.
Yeah. My only thing is, by the time this drops, there'll only be one weekend left, which means the two other shows have closed. But CJ and Scott will have seen two of them, I think, yes. Right? You guys are coming to two.
Yeah.
We just closed Julius Caesar. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Almost the Ides of March, y'all.
That's right. That was our 7 to 14-year-old show with the veterans. They had all done multiple shows with us before, and they were fantastic. Then we just opened Richard II, which had a phenomenal first weekend. They are just telling the story so clearly, and it's just a fun, easy production of it, and I'm very proud of it, honestly. And then we are also opening The Tempest next week, and you will, when this drops, you'll have one more weekend to see The Tempest. You'll have two opportunities on Saturday and Sunday, March, whatever.
23rd, 24th.
Yeah, that one. Yep. So come check it out because it's very cute. It's 7 to 14-year-olds who have never done Shakespeare before.
And it's The Tempest.
And it's The Tempest. And it is very, very cute. Our Caliban turned 7. And he's...
I can't wait.
And he has a little bit of a speech impediment. And Yay! He is phenomenal. And who can't cares, wait. Right? You don't have to understand what Caliban's saying. Who cares? He's cute. And they came up with the concept, as they always do, and the concept is really, really cute, and it's basically kids on a playground playing The Tempest for you.
Love it.
And it's really fun. And I think people are going to dig it. Now, I will say...
Say it.
We just did a run-through yesterday, on Tuesday, and maybe three of them knew their lines. So we'll see
theater.
What happens. I think it'll come together and it's going to be great. But if nothing else, you will have a frickin' blast.
Can't wait.
So come to the Hudson backstage on Santa Monica Boulevard, Theater Row. Check it out.
Yes.
Okay. Let's get out of here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us for Theater Season 5, the new look. Reboot. What are we doing next time? Did we decide?
We're doing the Dames.
Are we just pivoting? Okay, so we just did the Sirs. Now we're going to do the Dames. Yes. We're going to expand it to three, though. We're going to do Dame Judy of the Dench.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do Dame Helen of the Mirren.
Yes.
And Dame Maggie of the Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, perfect. So we
All
get
that
to tell
Downton
the
Abbey watching is going to come in handy.
Yeah, and we get to tell the Maggie Smith Tennessee Williams story for the 10th time on the podcast, and I can't
best
wait.
Best story ever.
It's the best story ever. Okay. Well, we'll see you next week for the Dames.
Dames.
Yeah. Oh, this is a fun app.
Yes. Do y'all have questions or comments? Please reach out to us via email, Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Scott?
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. And this is just a matter of fact, our theme song is way better than your fucking theme song. So
it's true.
It. Ryan's also an amazing human being. He writes all of our stingers, does everything, and yeah. And then we hadn't decided.
I know who it is.
Hit me.
I think it needs to be Eugene Ionesco.
Should we just start making rhinoceros?
And finally to the great award-winning playwright, Eugene Ionesco, who writes every one of our episodes and he doesn't know because he's dead. One day in the afterlife, Ionesco. we will buy you a drink.
Now you sound like Inigo Montoya.
I changed it up. We're gonna get there. The dude spoke like 9 languages, so we'll eventually get there.
We're sorry, France. We're sorry.
But good call on the UNESCO.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well. Yeah. We need a little absurdism.
It's all good. It's all good. Yeah. I appreciated it. Did you guys hear about the rats in New Orleans that got into the police station and ended up eating all the weed and got super high?
No, but that's
hilarious.
AP News. Okay,
that's a Seth Rogen movie.
It's gonna be a sequel to Cocaine Bear.
Yeah, Flushed Away 2.
Weed
Rats. an animated version.
Yeah,
like
speaking
just
of
like,
Flushed Away, Patty Stew I think is in that one too, or is it Ian McKellen? One of them's in it.
In which
one of them plays the toilet or something? Flushed Away.
Oh right,
about the rats who get flushed away.
Flushed Away.
Cute.
Anyway, we'll see you later.
You're not gonna do it?
I don't know. Should I?
Well,
do I keep it going?
Yes. I have a song pulled up if you didn't, because I'm always scared of you
go,
asking me
you,
to do it.
Go.
I'll never have the power to control the land,
right,
or conquer half the world, or claim the sun. I'll never be the kind
the
who
podcast.
Simply waves her hand.
Someone turn off her mic.
And has a million people do the things I wish I'd done.
Get the hook.
But in
Later
the
on.
Eyes of heaven... What's your problem with Jason Robert Brown?
I love Jason Robert Brown.
You just don't like the song?
I just don't like you.
No,
I love you. I love you guys. I'm so glad we're back in action.
Whatever. Later, everybody.
Fuck you guys.
The theater. The theater. Bring out Louis.
Theater.